Mike,
turn that radio down a little over there too.
Okay, Mike. Today is
the far knob over there. Just turn it to your left.
Okay.
Rare and sometimes.
Okay, today is May the 14th, 1991. I'm with Stoey Gary in the Rosine Fire Department, and Henry DeHart is also present. I'll start out with a little biographical information on you. What's your age?
57.
You actually tell it. Very good. And what's your birthday?
February the 28th, 1934.
Where were you born?
Horton, Kentucky.
Horton? What county is that?
It's Ohio County. It's 3 miles down the road.
Oh, okay. And what's your ethnic background?
That's a $64 question.
Well, you don't have any idea?
Well, yes, I have an idea, but none of us really know who we are and what we are.
Well, mixture. What do you think?
Some of the Gearys came from Germany. And of course, I go back on the Dockery side. My grandmother was a doctor.
Dockery?
Uh-huh.
D-O-C-K-E-R-Y?
D-O-C-K-R-E-Y.
Oh, R-E-Y. Okay.
And they were Dutch. Is this on tape?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I won't say what I was going
to say. You want me to turn it off?
No, I was going to say what I told my father-in-law once.
Oh.
But anyway.
Well, we can restrict it. We can leave the tape on and restrict it.
I'll tell you after a while.
All right.
But there's some Indian blood in the family that I've traced.
Do you know what tribe?
No,
would it be around here?
I have no idea. But
okay.
And how? I've heard my grandmother talk about it. I remember a lot of things my grandmother had said that, you know, it's nothing on paper, but just some things that she said.
Was it your grandmother on your mom or your dad's side?
On my mother's side.
Okay. Go ahead.
She was a doctor.
Okay. And, what was the name of your mother?
Lizzie. Elizabeth was her name. She always went by Lizzie.
Elizabeth Dockery?
No, Elizabeth Ferris.
Ferris? F-E or F-A?
P-H-A-R-R-I-S.
Oh, P-H-A-R-R-I-S. Okay. And what was your dad's name?
Vernie Geary.
V-E-R?
V-E-R-N-I-E.
And were they both from around here?
No, they were born in Butler County.
Oh. What brought them to Rosine area?
Well, first they went to Eccles.
Where is it?
That's down near Rockport, Kentucky.
I do know where that is.
And then came back into the Horton area. And when I was between 2 and 3, I would say it was probably in the spring after I was 2 years old. I can remember we moved in a wagon and came up 62, had two cows tied behind the wagon and moved to Rosine.
Was the dirt, I guess the road was dirt, no rock, dirt?
Oh, it was a rock road. But, well, now part of it might have been blacktop. I know it was at that time.
So you came in with the cows. Was your house that you moved into already built, or did your people build it?
Yeah, we rented a house when we moved here.
Oh, you did? What kind of work did your dad do?
He was a carpenter.
A carpenter. How many children did they have?
They had 5, and one died when she was 5 years old.
What happened to her?
It was some kind of what they refer to or have referred to as the water hit.
Oh.
Her head began to swell and it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm. Ooh, what a horrible death.
And she was 5 years old when she died. And then I had a brother that died in 85.
What was his name?
Roy. And then I have a sister in Louisville, Lena, and a sister, Jewel, here in Ohio County.
What's your religious background?
All my people were Church of Christ. I'm Methodist.
When did you make the switch?
When I was converted.
Well, were you a teenager or
no,
in your older
I was,
years?
It was in 1956 or 7, I'm not sure.
I heard you're a preacher, is that true?
I pastored for 10 years in the Methodist Church.
You don't preach anymore?
I just fill in, help out, and I was advised to stop in 70.
Because of your heart?
Uh-huh. And see, they wasn't able to do anything for me for so long. Mm. And they couldn't do any surgery.
Oh, until technology got...
Well, no, it wasn't technology. I grew my own artery.
Oh, and, you healed yourself.
I knew I was, chugging along about as far as I could go. So I went down to my family doctor. I said, I'm not doing very good. And he said, no, you're not. And he gave me some blood thinner, and he said, why don't we go back and see if there's anything they can do now? Of course, I'd been saying that, done told me, said, if we ever find out anything, we'll call you. And so I said, give me a few days to think it over. He said, you don't have a few. I said, well, if I don't have a few, we'll go on. And I got up there, and they started with the angiogram. And the first thing this doctor said, he said, I see two double barrels. So I said, what are you talking about? He said, there's four arteries, two coming across meeting each other. And I said, in other words, you got something to work with. He said, yeah. Mm. So that was the first time they'd ever found anything. See, I was collapsed everywhere.
Oh, goodness.
And it's been wonderful since 87, I'll tell you.
I can imagine. How much education do you have?
Well, I have the equivalent of a Bachelor of Arts degree.
What was your major?
That was through the church. I got that at Emory University.
And where is Emory?
In Atlanta, Georgia. And I don't know really how many college hours I would have.
Well, that would be, that's sufficient.
But it's equivalent to Bachelor of Arts.
Okay. And how many, give me your wife's maiden name.
Joyce Mitchell.
And where is she from?
She was from Evansville, Indiana.
How did you all meet?
Well, we started to work together. I got a job where she was working.
In Evansville?
Yeah. And she was pretty as a doll. So I didn't give up. And I told her the other day, I said, there's a lot of pretty women, but you're still the prettiest.
Well, that's nice to hear. Sure.
And we got married and moved to Louisville, stayed there a while, and then came back here. And
how many children do y'all have?
We have four, two boys and two girls.
Names?
Ronald. Stephen, Drusilla.
How do you spell that?
D-R-U-C-I-L-L-A.
Okay.
And Cynthia.
Do they all live around here?
Cynthia lives the farthest away, about 12 miles.
The farthest away, 12 miles.
We're close.
I believe it. Well, so as a young man, you grew up here.
Uh-huh.
Where did you go to school here?
My first year was in the Baptist Church. The old school burnt that year. And we went, they had two rooms. The smaller grades went to the Baptist Church. The larger grades went over to the Methodist Church, and that's where they completed until they built the school. And the teacher that was here at that time wrote a song about the crew that built the school and...
do you have a copy of that?
I've got a copy of it.
That would be neat to put in a documentary.
I'll have to find it.
Wouldn't it?
But I've got it here somewhere because...
Okay. I'll make a note of that too.
Yeah. I'm not sure where I've got it, but I've got it.
Then did you go to high school? Or did you drop out?
Never went to high school. I went 1 year to high school.
Was that a county high school or did they have something like that here?
Horse Branch.
Horse Branch. Uh-huh. And why did you quit?
Why does all kids quit? Because they're not intelligent enough to go on.
I thought maybe you had to work to help support your family.
No, I didn't have to work. See, my mother and dad were divorced when I was about 3.5 years old. And my grandmother raised us. And I mean, we were closely associated with Mom and with Dad, mm-hmm. but as the years come by, things kind of drifted apart. Mm-hmm. But they fell back in order.
Was that your maternal grandmother or your paternal?
That was my grandma. A lot of people don't understand. At last, my granny, my mother's mother, married a Geary.
Oh.
Which was Leif Geary, which was a brother to my father's father. So I called him Papa Leif.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one I called Grandpa, which was Caleb Geary. My grandfather was my dad's father. And I don't know where I was telling. I was telling Henry or somebody the other day. Where Henry's dad lives now, Lewis Matthew lived there. And he was a woodworker. And his wife, Ethel, would weave cotton. She had this big wheel and they raised their own cotton. And I would have to take Papa Leif up there. Now, he died when I was 3 years old, but I'd have to go with him because he couldn't see. And we'd get to the highway, and I'd say, there's a car coming, and he'd just drag you right on across anyway.
Hmm.
He'd holler, I can see it, but he couldn't see.
Hmm.
And he died in 1937. And, we lived there across from the Methodist Church. When he died.
Hmm.
He was a wonderful old fellow.
Well then, when you quit school, did you work around here?
Yes.
What kind of work did you do?
Just odds and ends. Whatever would come up, we'd go out and work on somebody's farm. And,
would that include tobacco? And what was raised here at that time?
Yeah, tobacco. I set tobacco and have get in hay and stuff of that sort. Pick cucumbers. And,
cucumbers?
Uh-huh. Then when, I think I was about 14 or 15, me and Lauren Leach and somebody else, I can't remember who, we took a contract of... See, this railroad yard's over here. It used to be all the time something coming in there. And there was always, pick up jobs there. And this guy gave us a contract to load his hammer handle into a boxcar to be shipped out. And, of course, we hired us a crew. And man, we were big shots. And very little profit that we made off of the time we hired a crew. We three split it,
How did you ship the
handle? By rail, you load them in a boxcar.
Were they in sacks or boxes?
No. You picked them up. They brought them in and laid them in the yards or pitched them out in a pile. You filled your arm full and you carried them in there and loaded them in the car. And you can imagine a bunch of kids doing that, but that's all we had helping that. On that one job, I can remember.
You remember the pay?
I can't remember. It seems to me like that they gave us $90 to load that boxcar.
How long did it take?
We did it in less than a day. I don't remember that. That's been a long time ago. I can't remember how long it took us. But
how many were in your crew?
I can't remember that. Of course, we probably, you know, hired every boy that was loose to help us.
Was that the same company that had the baseball bats, or was that
a
different group?
No. Back then, there were different individuals, and I can't think of this one. See, I want to think he was a Wilson, but I'm not sure. I think this man actually bought handles himself up in Grayson County and down here too. And but this was some of his that he had himself. He wanted loaded out, and he gave us the job. And we used to, fertilizer used to come in over there. Okay, we boys go over and we'd get a job fertilizer. We used to go with these grocery trucks, help them unload their groceries. And,
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, well, that was the only way you had to pick up a lot of cash. Because back then, nobody had anything much to cut grass with. And you did that with a weed whip. And, of course, we'd take those jobs too. But nobody was over rushed to get into one of those jobs because that was work. And but Rosine was a place back then. I still sit back and admire a lot of the older people that would look out for us kids when we were out doing things we shouldn't. I've had time and time again one of them would come to me and lay his hand on my shoulder. And I don't want to see this anymore. Don't want to hear about it. Don't want to have to go tell on you. And you knew they meant business, but they were good to you. There was a kind of love in Rosine then that would sparkle any heart.
Hmm. And that's when things were prosperous here?
No, that's when things were not so prosperous here.
They were on
here,
the decline.
But it was a community made up of people that cared for each other. And I still look at Rosine as being the same way it was when I moved here. Mm-hmm. Even though all of the Rosine faces have changed with the exception of two of people that live around here in town. And that was B. Decker, which was B. Taylor, used to be, or B. Collard to start with. And James Monkey Taylor over here. That's the only two people that live right here in town now that was here when we moved here.
My goodness.
And see, over where the new highway is now when we moved here, Flora Taylor had a little grocery store and the community library set right where the highway goes.
Now, are you talking about when you moved here as a child or after you came back?
No.
When you were still a little toddler?
Uh-huh. And so at that time, then the Earps lived over here, which was kin to White Earp.
My goodness.
And then you had Ivy Payton. All the Paytons are gone. And then you had the Crowders that lived over there. They're gone. You had the Johnsons. They're all gone from here. And now Bertie has moved back. But they didn't live here when we moved here. They were away at that time. And then you had the old post office, and you had the old feed mill. I can remember when Dewey offered run the feed mill.
Do you have any pictures of all these things?
There's a possibility that there might be some, but I can't remember.
I'd like to ask around. It would be nice.
I've got a picture you might want to see, and I started to get that this morning. I was 4 years old. And it's the only picture that I know of that shows the old Methodist church. And
it would be good if we could get a copy of that.
I've got a negative, and I've got the picture of the house. It was, I would say I was about four. And
is that the church you had your conversion in, the old church?
No. I am a conversion in the new church, but that was the old church.
What happened to the old church?
Well, it just, you know, it was so old, it and probably wasn't built all that good to start with. Mm-hmm. And it was built up off the ground. Us kids, we used to play under that church. And it was, you know, that tall off the ground in the back. And I was showing my sons the other day, the church has got a levee, or had a levee on the edge around each side. And if anybody's working over there and put a ladder up or anything, we was all up there too, you know, and on that levee. And we got to playing Superman and jumping off, and didn't work out so good because nothing would hold us back. It'd just be zoom and he's gone. But when I was a kid, there was a lot of days of playing all in trees.
All
and you
in
never
trees.
See a kid climbing a tree anymore. But that was something we was fascinated with. Climb a tree, stay up there.
Did you have a tree house?
No, we'd sometimes build a little platform for everybody to sit on or what have you. Maybe a little headquarters there. But we all had our hideouts everywhere, see. And me and the girl next door, Connie Emery. Connie would always talk some of her family into one of the little buildings outside. We'd fix up a regular little kitchen, and she'd do the cooking. And we'd go out and pick greens and bring them in and cook them. And fried potatoes. Just kids, but you know, that was fun in those days.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
And then maybe, you know, you'd go for a month or so, and then all of you'd have a big free-for-all. Everybody'd be mad at each other 15, 30 minutes, and then it's all right back the same.
How old were you when you left this community?
I was 18 when I left.
Did you leave because of job
opportunities? I went to get a job.
And where did you go?
I went to Evansville.
How did you feel when you got there? Did you experience what we call now culture shock, or was it pretty much what you were used to?
No, it wasn't anything I was used to. It was because, you know, Roseanne was countryfied. And it's been years and years since Evansville was countryfied.
How did you get there?
I'm sure I rode with somebody or went on the bus. May have had my own vehicle. I can't remember that for sure.
Mm-hmm. And what was your job when, or how long did it take you to get a job when you got there?
A couple of days, I guess.
Do you remember what it was? The kind.
Yeah,
of
I ran into a boy that had went to Bossy High School. And he had an old, real old truck that he kind of fixed up. And so we met at one of the places where we was looking for jobs. He knew of this other place, so he wanted to go down there. So I said, I'll go with you. And we went down, we both got a job at Bernard Bottle Cap. And didn't pay very much, I don't know exactly how much. So we were thrilled, and then of course I went from that to Surveyo, which was, you know, a lot better job and a lot better pay, and then all of a sudden Surveyo just, that's it.
What was Surveyo?
They were a refrigerator company. Years and years ago, they built those gas refrigerators, you know, where they could, people out in the country could have them. See, when I was a boy here.
No, there was such a thing, that's interesting.
There's no electricity here, see, until up in the 40s. And all you had was lamplight. And if people were going somewhere, they carried a lantern. I don't know whether you've ever experienced the light a lantern gives or not.
Well, I have in the Amish community, and that's about it.
It don't help you to see where you're going. I always figured it was to keep off the bears and so forth, and because it didn't give you enough light to really see where you was going.
Well, did anybody here have a refrigerator? When you're talking about people in the country could use the gas.
Well, some of them were gas, some of them were kerosene.
Kerosene refrigerators.
Mm-hmm. There was probably two in the grocery stores. Two of the grocery stores. There could have been others, but I can remember, especially the one at Mr. Alford's store. They really didn't keep stuff, what you would say, cold, but, you know, mm-hmm. it was cool, it was different. And the only kind of meats that you saw in the store was cured meat, and they had usually a screen wire cage they kept that. And then under that, or they'd have it tied to the ceiling to keep the mice out of it. And under that was the drippings. That floor would be just as greasy as it could be right under that area where they kept the meats. And of course their candies, they would have just boxes sitting out there. And I can remember Eunice Crow had a store up on the corner. I was just a little kid. Every time I'd go in there, Eunice would take me over to that big box of chocolate drops. Of course, back then we called them nigger tucks. And he'd say, just help yourself, boy. And that was something, you know. Of course, you could take a penny and go in there and get all you wanted to eat then, really. I can remember when you could take 15 cents, buy two sandwiches and a soft drink.
Goodness. Now, was that here?
Uh-huh. If you saw any ice cream other than when someone would make homemade ice cream, it had to come all the way from Beaver Dam. And I can remember this one girl, her mother worked at Beaver Dam, and she'd come in and she'd have a box of ice cream or something, and half the kids in the neighborhood get a bite of it.
Well, when you got to Evansville, did you board with someone?
No, my mother lived in Evansville.
Oh, I see. So you moved in with your mom.
Uh-huh.
Did you get homesick for here?
You always wanted to come back.
You did?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, there was something, like I said, you know, about the people that were in Rosine when I first came here. That, to me, and I know it's changed, but to me it's still that way.
And how do you see it?
I see it as a place of love and understanding and help. I can remember during the war when all the women in the community would meet in the daytime and have prayer services for the boys that was in service. There was something about that. There was a tie there that, to me, is still there. It just needs to be strengthened.
It's an emotional mm-hmm. bond.
And there's just something about Rosine that I just like to see Rosine do better.
Do you think part of your bond is with the terrain, the way the hills are, or is it mainly the people?
It was the people.
Just the people. And it stayed with you all the time that you were away?
I've never forgot.
How long were you away?
I never away over 2-3 months at a time.
Now, by that, do you mean you would have a job and come back to visit, or do you mean you
come back to visit them?
And when did you move back here as a resident?
1956.
And what were you doing as an occupation?
I was working for a motor company. Mm.
And where, pardon me, where were you?
In Louisville.
How did you fit in up there? With factory, was it factory work?
Uh-huh.
This is the conclusion of Side A.
I can see why Bill Monroe has the love in his heart for Rosine that he has. And I mean, he has a deep, deep feeling.
Well, let's
for Rosine.
I'm sure he does. Let's talk about when you were up there, and all these songs have been written about people from Kentucky and hills, the south, and they went north and worked in factories. So you went to Louisville and worked in a car factory. Now, with your background being at what it was and your love for Rosine, when you were up there, how did you fit in the city?
I always feel like I fit in wherever I was at.
Did anybody tease you about being from the country since you were in a big city?
Oh, yeah, but that didn't bother me. I was proud of being from Rosine. Always have been. Never hesitated a minute to tell everybody where I'm from.
Do you think that when you were there, did you cling to what you would consider your roots more? Is that one way that you got into this bluegrass music?
Well,
I don't know what they
call
it.
I can remember as a very, very small child listening to the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh.
So small that I thought that those people were in that cabinet. I can remember actually sneaking and looking around in the back of that big radio just see what was going on in there. So that was pretty small. But I can remember that.
Do you think that's one of the big influences for you to have gotten involved in the music?
No, all my family were musicians.
Oh.
I have an uncle, 89. He plays the fiddle every night before he goes to bed.
Where does he live?
He lives down in McHenry now. He used to live right down about 2 miles down the
Would he allow me to interview him?
I've done arranged that.
Huh? Oh, great. Because
he's hard of hearing, and I talked to his son last night. I'd been trying to get his son, and I told him that you all come to his son, and he'll go over there or make arrangements, because he's 89, and if he didn't understand who you was, he might not even, you know.
What we're trying to do in the documentary is construct the way the community is now with the way it was then, the same themes that are still here. You see, you're a perfect example because you grew up with the music. It was in your family, and you've retained it, and you've been out, and you've come
back. And I have a picture of Cletus Smith with Uncle Penn. Well, Cletus, his mother, and my grandmother were sisters. Give me one of those panthers over, Henry. Let me show her.
You see those, Henry? Well, Ned, on your musical influences, did you get your music on your mom's or your dad's side?
Well, it's on both sides.
Oh.
See, there's Cletus Smith and Uncle Penn in their picture. Okay, this is, I always call him Uncle Clarence. That's Clarence Wilson, who lived, joined farms with my uncle down there. My uncle joined farms with him either way. And this is Uncle Penn. So right over here, you see Uncle Penn's crutches?
Is that what that is? My eyesight's not real good.
That had to be his last years, because he was on crutches his last 2 or 3 years.
From the fall off the mule, right?
And this is one of the fellows, Cleve Bays, that influenced Bill quite a bit.
Hmm.
And he was a fiddle player, and he had a brother that was a fiddle player.
Now, was this man older than Mr. Monroe?
Oh, yes.
A lot older.
Yes, this man here would be 91 if he was living today. That was with Uncle Penn there. You can tell he's a young man, but see, he was blind, or almost blind. He could see if someone was standing out there, he could see them, but he couldn't tell who they were until he heard their voice. That's for most people that are blind. And he would walk. He lived way back, Cletus did, way back behind Bethel Church.
It's
about 4 miles down there. Well, they live way beyond that in a big hollow back there. He would walk up from there to Rosine. Of course, we would be just tickled to death as kids see him coming. See, everybody gather around him. He done a lot of the talking blues.
What does that mean?
Well, he talked the song, and it was a blues song.
I don't know if I've ever heard that or not.
Well, see, Robert Long was the talking blues boy on the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh.
But Cletus did a lot of that stuff. And he was always full of wit. He could sit down and make up a song. If he met you,
He can make up a song about you in a few minutes.
That would be charming, wouldn't it?
One day somebody came and...
We should include him on the documentary.
Someone was sick or had died or something, and he was to deliver the message. Well, see, he was just full of mischievous as he could be. And time he got there, he done had a song made up about it. And those sorts of things, he was good at it. And of course, Bill has no problem. There's no telling how many songs that Bill has written that he's never published or anything. Mm-hmm. They're short songs, and so was Cletus. And of course, we wouldn't want to forget old Tex Atchison. He's a Rosine.
Yes, I know
too,
that.
And then the Hall of
Fame. I think we need to mention him.
He's more of a Western singer. Mm-hmm. So he played in a lot of movies. I remember one time I was watching a late movie, and there was a sergeant from each army that rode up and met each other. Well, it was both Tex. I could tell that difference. But see, the one had his, they had on different uniforms. And one of them had the mustache, and the other didn't have a mustache. But they were both Tex, see, in that movie. He did a lot of Gene Autry stuff, too.
Well, so with you growing up,
which lives in Louisville, or lives in New Albany, works in Louisville.
Well, then, if you were talking, all right, let's talk about your family's musical influence on you. On your mother's side, what kind of musicians were there?
Okay, there was my mother, her brother, which is the one I was telling you about, plays the fiddle and banjo. Then he's got... three sons that plays instruments.
What did your mother play?
Guitar. And my dad didn't play any instrument, but his brothers did. And my sisters used to sing all the time. Back you know, when I was a kid, when they washed the supper dishes, they sang. That was just a ritual for them. And, of course, from the day we started into grade school, he was always taught to sing at school, and most of that was gospel singing. And what little I really know about the music situation, Arthur Wilson taught me everything I know.
Man. And who was Arthur Wilson?
He was a school teacher here at Rosine. And
so as a child you listened to the opera. That was a big influence.
Yeah, well, they were singing at home every day.
And you had it at home.
It was there. And
do you think we could do a character sketch of Cletus Smith? Do you know enough about him for us to do that?
Yeah, I can remember a lot about him, of course. Probably a lot of things I don't know that other people do know.
Well, I think I should start asking about him too, don't you? If he were that kind of person.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to focus on the whole community.
Now, Uncle Johnny could tell you a lot about
Cletus. Okay, so I'll need to ask Uncle Johnny. Okay.
And
now, Mr. Smith lived up Bethel Road.
Uh-huh. Is that what you're talking about? Your dad, I'm sure, remember Cletus, doesn't he? See, he died in, he was 48 years old. And I don't remember what year that was in, but he was still a young man, 48.
That is young.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what happened to him.
I think he developed a stomach problem. Mm-hmm. And actually maybe bled to death from inward.
Did he have family?
His dad was crippled, probably. May have been arthritis, it may have been no telling what in those days. He couldn't walk. He used a straight chair. He could walk that straight chair
just
and get himself around.
No, he sat in that chair.
Oh, he sat in it and walked in.
Walked it. He walked that chair. And, of course, they needed to take him from one room to the other. They would drag that chair. And that's... And then his sister married that was living there with them. Their mother died when they were real young. And after she married, he still stayed there and took care of his dad. And then his dad passed away, and he didn't live very long after his dad. And I don't remember the years on that. And that's another thing that Uncle John could fill you in on.
Okay.
Close.
Did he play in these, there seemed to have been a lot of dances and things going on.
Yeah, they would go from community to community. Or just like he might stop by our house, okay. We either went and got him a guitar or he had one with him. You started entertainment right away after he got that. And that's the way it was with anywhere you went, just about. I remember in the afternoon, he'd go by Uncle Clarence Wilson's, and Uncle Clarence would get his banjo out. He'd play and sing. He'd worked all day in the field, but they still did that. And that was the way that Cletus was, and he was, being almost blind, he never, he's had jobs and he worked, but he, just couldn't get one anywhere. And, he loved his music.
So did he always? People. Did he always play one instrument, or
could he could play?
What else could he play?
I've seen him play everything. I don't know how good he could play it. I can't remember that. I can remember. You remember they had the thumping, what they call the thumping banjo. Cletus could pick that banjo back then, but it wasn't noted that anybody ever did it that way. But he could pick it just like he picked his guitar. He just taught himself, really.
Had it in his bones, it sounds like.
Well, he had it in there, and he was determined that that was something that he wanted to do, and I guess being, almost blind, that was something that he would latch on to and kind of learn as much about it as he could. Then back then, those people learned a lot from each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they had the time after work.
And sometimes, you might not see him for 2 months or 3 months, and you might see him every week for a while. And I'm sure that's, Uncle Penn was a trader. That's kind of how he made his living. And from all indications, he would either hang his stuff on the horse and take off on one of his journeys, or put it in the wagon or the buggy. And on his rounds to see all these people, when they'd get there, they'd have a little music, a little entertainment, and Uncle Penn do his trading and probably spend the night there, maybe two nights at a time. Then the next morning, go on to another place. See.
Now, when you say trading, what does that mean?
Okay, he would have kind of what you call a flea market today. Uncle Penn would have that either on his horse or in the wagon. Just more or less junk stuff, but somebody else might want it, see, or might need it.
So it wasn't just one thing, it would be a whole hodgepodge of things.
No, he might have a couple of saddles on there, bridles, and maybe some household items or, Back then, a lot of times that was the only way people saw anything, because they didn't go anywhere to see it or to buy it. And sometimes they'd trade, and I'm sure he would, try to get a little cash difference to make things meet together back home when he come back.
Well, now, Bessie, Austin told me that he boarded some from her memory. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, I'm not old enough to remember. Well, I just have to go on hearsay.
Well, that's what a lot of this is hearsay.
You mean you boarded with someone?
Yes. Reverend had always had his own household.
Now, he at one time lived back in this area on the Hines property before he lived up here.
Do you know who owns where, what we call now Uncle Penn's
yeah.
Heaven is? Who owns it?
Bill and James.
Monroe.
Uh-huh.
How many acres is it? Do you know?
Is it 4 or 11?
I wouldn't mind it over an acre.
Huh? Well, it might be just in that, but I mean, to start with, it was either a 4-acre plot or 11-acre plot.
You know who owned it before they did?
One of those Stewart boys owned it, wasn't it?
Henry Clay.
Henry Clay, yeah. And,
Is that where Uncle Penn died?
Uh-huh. From all indications that I have.
Did you ever hear anything about his death?
Yeah.
Well, how long did he die and wasn't found for a while? It seems isolated there to me, but at the time it might not have been. All right, now you're talking about in this community people would feed each other.
Yeah, you know, nobody thought anything about if if all of the people in the neighborhood was at your house. They never thought of him. They eat the meal. And if they was traveling, they eat the meal. If somebody come through that was hungry, somebody would feed them. It was no problem. Even though food might have been scarce and times were hard, everybody got something to eat. And see, there's a big hill through Rosine that the railroad goes up, and the trains get real slow.
I'll bet they get slow on that hill.
And these hobos would jump off the train and come to somebody's house to get something to eat and go back over, wait for another train and catch that and go on. And I remember as a child, it was nothing to see a hobo coming.
So it was common?
It was common. Yeah. Uh-huh. The thing that I can remember mainly that disturbed the people mostly were when the gypsies would come to town.
Oh, what did they do?
Well, they would usually set up, camp and stay a few days. And, of course, you would hear of them trying to kidnap blonde-headed kids. And if one of them had a kid with him that had light hair, well, that would be the talk while those gypsies were here. But they, most of them were would repair people's, they had the old wood cook stoves, and those grates would burn out. Well, people back then probably didn't think, and may not even had serial numbers. But anyway, most of these gypsy people was repairing those stoves. And of course, every woman that loved to cook wanted her stove in tip-top shape. And those, they'd get those gypsies to work, but they would still be afraid of them. And if it was a blonde-headed kid with them at all, everybody thought that kid was kidnapped. And that was their fear of them. Kidnapping some kid in the community.
About how many people would be in the gypsy camp, would you say?
Oh, sometimes they would be 10 or 12 of them. And they'd have two or three little trailers that they'd pull behind their cars back then.
That was with cars?
Uh-huh.
And yeah. Where would they camp out?
Well, usually right here on this lot somewhere they would set up where this fire station is now. And somewhere in this area.
How long would they stay?
Just till they repaired everybody's stove and got everybody scared to death, or maybe they were scared and was ready to leave town when they left, I don't know, but it would be a few days they'd stay. And sometimes they wouldn't stay too long because some of the jobs that they'd done wasn't too good, so I don't imagine they wanted to get the results of that. And but I can remember one time an entire family, these weren't gypsies, and it was a lady and her children, and I can't remember how many she had, but they stayed in the Methodist church for a few days, and the people fed them while they were there. I can't remember where they left and went to, or where they was on their way somewhere, and something happened. They was stranded in Rosine, and I remember that I'm staying there. I remember we played with the kids. It was that. And but the community fed them.
Were they as dirty as everybody always says gypsies are dirty?
Oh, now these weren't gypsies I'm talking about coming through that thing. Yes, they were, you know, they looked different too, see.
Were they darker skinned?
Darker skinned. That's why I say if it was a light complected child with them, that was a kidnapped victim, they knew right then. Of course, I don't guess it ever got reported, and it may have been kidnapped victims, you don't know. But they would stay a little while and move on. And people were leery of them, and people were actually afraid of them. And,
do you know what happened to Uncle Penn's son, why he died?
I believe it might have been the flu outbreak that they had back then. I think someone said it might have been pneumonia. Of course, you know, years ago everybody died of consumption. They didn't know what they had, they just called it consumption, which was connected with the lungs. And he was a young man when he passed away.
And what about his daughter?
Now that I haven't been able.
I haven't either.
If I can get James to sit still, James knows somebody. Mm-hmm.
You think she'd still, is she, young, would she be young enough to still be alive, or do you think she's probably
dead? Think they died. Well, I think they both died young.
Oh, she died young.
I'm almost sure. And I don't know whether they're really buried with her or buried out here. There's no proof either way.
No, because the Bethel Church's records were burned, and we've got them. They let me bar them from 1905 forward.
Nothing in there on her after 1905?
No. We'll put it this way. I've looked through it. Henry, have you looked through it? I made Henry a copy, too. I haven't seen it. I've looked twice. And the death records don't start till 1910, if they were recorded. But you have to write to Frankfurt for that.
I'm wanting to believe that she lived longer than he did, didn't she? You might check Butler County. See, I think she would have been from Butler County.
Well, that's kind of interesting, too, because it said that Penn was born in Butler County.
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing I thought I'd do at some point. What? Breckenridge, I think. And then it says they were from Tennessee, but I don't know where in Tennessee. The Vandevers. How do you say it? Everybody says it differently.
I say Vandeveer.
Vandeveer. Okay.
I don't know which is right.
I don't either.
Now that's something else you run into. Back years ago, they spelt their name the way it sounded. They didn't nobody know how to spell.
Yes, well, on his marriage certificate, he's got an X. He couldn't write.
I'm sure of that. I'm not sure of that, but I have no doubt. Someone had to witness his signature.
Mm-hmm. You don't know why he and his wife were separated?
No, that I don't know. I have an idea, because he was gone all the time, probably. You know, that happened years ago with a lot of families. The husband would maybe go off somewhere work in the log woods or whatever his trade was. He would go and be gone for 6 months at a time before he came back.
Well, that's true.
Because my aunt that's in the nursing home now, her dad was a timber man. And, you know, he might go across the river and work timber. And he was a builder. And he'd be gone for a long time. So what made me say that, the other morning, she was telling everybody that she'd been to Florida and back on her motorcycle. And come back, and her mama didn't say a word about her being gone. And she's 93, see, ain't named yet. And said, Papa just come in and said, and Mama had triplets. And Papa, that's the way he done. He would be gone for periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was back then with people and their work. Where now, say, they can get on a plane, go somewhere and back the next day, And
so when he was young, he was still a trader, from what you from what you can put together. Well, he would be gone a lot for that.
I figure he had a kind of a circuit that he made, from all indications, and from the way that other people have done things of that sort. And he would take off on his journey and make his trip, and he'd come back probably, well, I don't know how long, and check on. You can tell in the picture, the real picture, that he had those clothes on a long time. And I think I've got those over there. I'll show you.
Okay.
And but you can just see that those, he'd had those pants, the overalls on maybe, you know, 6 weeks or so, maybe longer. There's no telling.
No wonder they were separate. Oh, man. Let's see. Well, but, is there anything else about Uncle Penn we haven't put together that we can, that you can think of?
No, not really. Of course, you didn't get the other on there that you want. Do you want to do that?
If I wish you would, but I'm not present. If you're not comfortable with it, don't. But just think, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, it would be more significant for the future.
I know that, but I still think, I'm sure that Bill has a bad feeling of not being here when his uncle died. I know he does. He's made the remark he would like to have been here. But you can't always be where you want to be or where you need to be.
Well, and when you put it in context of what you're saying, it makes sense. It's not like if you thought he was totally deserted and no one ever cared for him, that's one thing. But if he was for the kind
of
person...
See, there in the later years, Uncle Penn was never at home. No one expected him to be there.
Right.
And no one went by to check on him because he'd come in maybe one day. And out he was gone again.
See, it makes sense that way.
Even though with his crutches, he was on crutches.
How long was he on crutches, I wonder?
I would say probably, from indications and pictures that I've seen, maybe for 2 or 3 years. I have no idea for sure. And I never asked Bill that question of how long he was on crutches.
Who wrote the words on the tombstone? Did Mr. Monroe write those? Where it talks about the...
You mean the song?
Mm-hmm. Is that the words to the song on the pen? I didn't know if it had more words to it, or if that was it.
No, I got a picture of it laying here somewhere, I think.
I wrote down what was on the tombstone, pardon me, and I wondered if there was more to it.
What's happened to it?
Well, you've got lots of papers here. We can.
I know it, but it was a picture. Real visible. Maybe I laid it up here. I was afraid of it. Yeah, there it is.
That's a good picture of it. Jody Hall is a nice man. I talked to him yesterday.
He came by here, and I asked him if you could, well, or if some of the people, I didn't know who would go. I said, they might want to interview you.
I had to change. I had set the interview up for Thursday, but I have to be in Bowling Green to set up my project design, and I'm going to get one of my professors that taught me all the stuff to help me with it.
And I'm sure that he's got some stuff that you probably don't have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure he does. I have very little. And so I'm going up next Monday at 10 o'clock to see him.
But, you know, to verify how long Uncle Penn was deceased before someone found him, I have no idea. There's rumors and they're different. I'm sure that no one thought about checking on with the way that, you know, he was gone.
Sure. And, that makes sense.
And evidently he never did really get over his leg being broke. He was still on crutches. And but he was still going, you know, as long as he could.
Well, what about Clarence Wilson? Well, now, would he have been in the same era as Uncle Penn and Cletus Smith, in the same time frame, age-wise?
Probably, with Cletus, if you'll notice, let me get those pictures and show you, and you can see how young.
We're about out of tape, too. This is the end of the first tape with Mr. Gary. Today is the 14th of May, 1991. This is the second in a series of, or a second of tapes with Stoy Gary.
He's with the Smithsonian Institution, which has all kind of history, huh?
Well, let me ask you.
And if you would call Ralph.
Well, let me ask you this. What does he do at Smithsonian? Because I need to get back into the files when the Kentucky had the Smithsonian Institute exhibit in 76. And I have a friend who works up there in one of the museums. But I thought if this gentleman, if I knew where he was in the, does he work for the Smithsonian or is he on a board?
No, he works for them.
Well, we'll
but I think what I did is I took all of my cards, all of my addresses, and see, Ralph has two addresses. He had one there at Smithsonian, and he's got his home out there.
Oh.
Well, he gave me his home number. And she's putting all that on the computer for me.
Oh, well, when you get it on the computer, just let me have it.
And it's going to be a real benefit to me.
Sure.
But I've missed it while she's got it, see, because I can't refer to it. I can't, I couldn't even call him unless I went back and looked at the telephone bills.
Okay. Now
but now, to tell you the kind of fellow he is, his wife inherited some property out there on one of the islands. And they move out there. And I had called his office. In about 3 weeks, one night about 11 o'clock, he called. He says, "Doy, I've been behind. We've moved," and told me all about it. He said, "We're out here away from everything," and, you know. But he's just that type of guy. He's down to earth and helpful. But really, what his title is, I don't know. It's on his card,
well,
but I never really
I'm
paid
it. I'm going to Tennessee the second week in June specifically to work with Professor Tottle on my project model. Linwood and I are going to work this week, and then I'm going to come back and see how things are fitting in. And then I'm going to go for refinement down there because you may have met him at the IBMA festival last year.
May have.
He's a real tall guy, and he worked for CARE for 2 years in India, but he teaches at East Tennessee, and he's been associated with Alson Krauss and all that. You know, I mean, he's been one of the teachers, and he's the one that took some of those people to Russia.
But sometimes I blame it on the heart condition that I've had. It's hard for me to put two and two together sometimes.
I understand. And then I'll tell you somebody else.
I mean, I know what I want to say, and I can't say it.
Right.
And I'll know you when I see you, but I may not be able to call your name.
I understand.
And that's, it's bad.
John Rosenbach, too, has been a big help to me. He's from New York, and his best friend is the New York State folklorist. And, you know, I came over here to the birthday party, and I met John and all these guys at the IBMA thing, and I kept pumping what I was thinking, and they said, "Go for it, Sarah, go for it, because nothing like this has been done, it needs to be done." So then when Dan decided to do the documentary, then I decided to expand it. So
But see, that's just like Dan. I remember that Dan, I remember what happened. There's Dan's all over the country, and the Hayes name is very familiar here.
That's true.
I couldn't say Dan Hayes. In the back of my, I could see Dan Hayes, the name, but I couldn't put it across. And I've had that problem.
Well, I've been with people who've had.
I've started having the problem when they put me on Enderol. It really told me for a little. I could know who you was and going to call you on the phone. I dialed a number, then I didn't know who I wanted or what
well,
I wanted.
That's frustrating. Well,
I know it is.
Well, let's talk about these pictures now. Are you free to tell me how you got these pictures? I'll ask you that way.
Dr. Dwight Wilson.
And who was Dr. Dwight Wilson?
He is a great-great-grandson of Clarence Wilson.
Was he a medical doctor?
No, he's a dentist.
And was he from here?
His dad was born near here, about 2 miles from here.
So he grew up in the area?
No, he didn't now.
Oh, okay.
Dwight was probably born in Beaver Dam, or that's where his parents were living at that time.
You know what I've noticed? When Bob or Dan or Rex or I talk about this community, it seems like we sort of go out starting with Rosina at the center, and we kind of expand it to like a circle. Uh-huh. But I've noticed everybody here will go, we're from Horse Branch, or no, we're from O'Layton. Uh-huh. And they separate it all, which is good. It should be.
If you don't separate it to us, we don't know what you're talking about.
I know, but it's interesting to me how we kind of put it all together, but everybody here separates it. So I'm trying to learn to do that.
Well, that's like C.R. Wilson. Actually, about 2.5 miles, 3 miles out in Mount Pleasant, where C.R. was born and raised. But he usually tells people, Rosine, or 3 miles out from Rosine. He still wants to identify Mount Pleasant, but he knows he's connected because we played together when we were kids here in town.
So you got these pictures from?
From Dwight.
Dwight Wilson. Uh-huh. And how did he have them? Were these people friends of his?
His grandmother.
Grandmother.
Uh-huh, still had the pictures. And see, what I was doing, I was looking for a picture of Cletus Smith. And I couldn't find one. I remember in my grandmother's pictures, there were pictures of Cletus. But I couldn't find any. So I went through everything I had. My sister went through what she had. And some of his other relatives, they couldn't find anything.
Could I have this?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Then I'm going to mark this on here that right now we're talking about picture one on here.
Okay.
I'll know.
And so Dwight got those pictures for me and called me, come down, pick them up. And I went down and he said, now, we don't know who this fella is. I said, Dwight, that's who I've been looking for. I said, that's Cletus Smith. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm sure glad. He said, well, now, I don't know for sure because grandmother didn't know, he said. And I said, well, that's who it is, and that's the one we're looking for.
So Cletus Smith is the one on the left, and uh-huh. Uncle Penn is on the right, just uh-huh. like this picture.
Cletus has the banjo and Uncle Penn the fiddle there. And that.
Now, the way these guys are dressed, is this typical of the time? What I'm trying to say is, was this dressed fancy every day?
Very rarely would you see Cletus. I don't, he's got on a light jacket there, but how I really recognized Cletus in that old picture was that top collar button. He always wore his top collar button. That was something that Cletus did year round, that top collar was buttoned. But he usually had on some kind of dress coat, we would call them back then, dress pants. Cletus wasn't the overhaul type person.
Do you think part of that had to do with his blindness and not having to be out to work?
Well, that could have been a part of it. But
did he always wear a cap?
Always wore a cap. He was always a little bald, and I figure that's why. And he always wore that type of cap. That was another thing that I was able to identify. Then when I got my magnifying glass and saw that he was blind, then I knew it was Cletus without any doubt. And
was he a tall man? He seems tall.
He was a tall person, a very strong person.
You mean strong as in muscles?
Uh-huh.
Muscular strength?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Had big hands. Of course, back in those days, he was a smoker, but he always rolled his own. And he'd sit down, he'd stop playing long enough, he'd roll him a cigarette, and he'd smoke that cigarette. Of course, that was mostly what all the people smoked back in those days. Of course, there again, we get off into the history of one of our largest tobacco industries now, which is Philip Morris. The man that started a tobacco company was born in Rosine.
He was?
Wood Axton. And then finally became Axton and Fisher Tobacco Company. Then when Mr. Axton passed away, they sold to Philip Morris. And there's some great history on him about Rosine. And the type of fellow that he was so generous that he fed his employees 2 meals a day.
Where could I find some information about him?
I'll give you some in a few minutes.
Okay.
right. After we get through, if you'll remind me. I'll let you look at it. I don't know why. I only have one copy, I think, now, because I sent a copy of that to
if you get tired, you tell me. Philip Morris. I can sit here all afternoon.
Of course, that all ties back with this, which...
So in this picture, you think he has on a dress shirt, dress pants.
I would say Cletus in that picture had on a white shirt.
That's interesting.
He wore a white shirt most of the time. I'm not saying how.
Was he basically neat and clean?
To the best of his ability for those days and
right,
time.
Right, taking all things into consideration.
His shirts would be starched. And,
would he have on boots or would he have on a pants
or
slipper?
No, he may have on work shoes, but he still had on those tight pants that he wore, which would be referred to in this day and time as a dress pant. And I don't know as I can ever remember Cletus going somewhere with any type of overhaul on. Probably at home he may have done that. But I can remember being his home when I was a kid.
What can you remember about that?
I can remember the Crowder peas that they had that day for dinner. Never forget them.
How did they have them fixed, since I'm not a Crowder?
They just cooked them like you would cook a pinto or a northern bean. But I can remember the taste of them right now, and I still love the Crowder pea. And I raise me some every year.
What else did they serve with the peas?
Back then, most of the way they fixed the potatoes, they peeled them and they boiled them. And you can see the grease on top of and they dipped the potato out of the juice, see.
Oh, so they put a little grease in the potato?
Oh, yes. Plenty, I'm sure, in that day and time. But even though back then, I know times had to be hard. There was always plenty of food on the table, and about anywhere you went. And because they'd have, family get-togethers. It wasn't anything for us to have company and the kids sleep all over the floor. And but I'll never forget those Crowder peas that day. And I still have a taste for them. I still crave them occasionally. And my wife's a good cook, but she'll never be able to fix them like those. I think.
Wonder who was the cook then?
I'm not sure. See, at that time, his sister was still living there. She probably did the cooking. But now I had an uncle on my dad's side that was about 4 foot tall.
4 feet?
And he was a bachelor up until he was probably 50 years old, or maybe in his late 40s. He did all the cooking. You got a wonderful meal when you went there, too. He stayed with my grandfather. My grandfather was blind. Mm-hmm. And Leaston was his name. And he could play any instrument there was to play, too. And he was a marvelous cook. And he put his apron on when they would have company, and the women tried to get in the kitchen to help, but he still done his cooking.
What are these
sticks? That's a fence, honey. A picket. Today a picket fence. It's wooden stakes with wire.
Oh, is that
twisted around each individual stake at the top and bottom, and sometimes through the center.
This looks so slanted. I can really
okay, it's probably
describe it. I can see that.
That's going up a hill there is the reason it looks so bad. But a lot of times those, if you broke a post off somewhere, they would just lay over. Mm. But most everybody then had a stile.
Yes.
You know what a stile?
Yes.
And you crossed over there and you didn't tear the fence down. Mm-hmm. Because I can remember when we would go visit our family that lived up in Butler County, we would ride a bus up to Goss Crossing, get off the bus there, and walk all the way back over into Butler County. And instead of going the road, you would go across fields, and everybody had a style. You went across that fence, and you didn't damage your fence, Most of them had a rail up there for you to, something for you to hold on to so you could get across, but it didn't damage their fence, see? And people respected it enough to go that route to where they didn't damage your fence. And
well, now, is this, are these trees in the back?
Uh-huh. Yes, that's, I would say that was probably in the fall with the way they're dressed. And
these trees look young. They uh-huh. look like big old trees.
It looks like they're small trees. Probably they had gone in there and cleared part of that. Mm-hmm. And they did most of that by hand, too.
I just wondered if the logging had been there. That's what I was...
Logging.
Mm-hmm. You know, people had cut for timber or had...
They probably cut timber out of there, but from... Well, you can see probably there were some trees or land that had been cut. And but that fence going up that hill looks like it's down, but I think that's just the way with it going up the hill. It looks like it might be leaning, and it could be leaning some. But what they did, see, they put that, those fence were homemade. And they'd take that wire, and after they laid each board in, that wire was twisted. Then go on to the next post, or next strip of fencing, and twist the wire again. And that was, you know, they had the old rail fence, and there was still a lot of that in this country when I was a kid, I can remember. But then they had this type of slat fence that a lot of that was used to enclose their garden. To keep the chickens out and so forth. Instead of having their chickens penned up, they fenced the garden.
Makes sense.
And
well, I noticed Uncle Penn here. Seems like he's got such long fingers.
Oh, he does have.
Did you see how long those fingers were?
He's really got the long fingers.
So. Did he always have that big mustache that stuck out?
From everything that I've heard, he did have. You can see his watch fob. See, almost everybody that wore what they called a pocket watch back then was about all they had. They had fobs. There's two fobs, see, hanging on there. That's some kind of something with an identification on it of some kind. It may be some of those old company store flickers or something of that sort. I don't know. But because a lot of people used to wear them as a fob on their watch.
He's in overalls, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
That looks like a felt hat.
Yeah. He had the big hat.
And a denim lined jacket.
Uh-huh. I would say that would have been the fall of the year, from all indications.
All right.
Now, on...
I will call this a picture... Recall, we don't have a picture of that on here. So
no, that's not identified on there. But it's a picture of Uncle Clarence Wilson there on the left.
We'll call it picture two.
This was either made where Uncle Clarence had been hewing ties or it was in his wood yard. You see all those wood chips?
Yes.
And that was probably made somewhere near the house. A lot of places in the backyard, they had horses set up that they laid the wood in, sawed it, and they would split it out there, and there would always be chips. And then that could be an area where they was hewing cross ties. They did a lot of that in those days. But you can see there, Uncle Clarence looked like a fairly young man compared to Uncle Penn in this picture here.
Yes, now that's Uncle Penn.
Uh-huh, and that was before, evidently, you know, he'd hurt his leg. I don't know what year that could have been in, but he didn't have his crutches, so he was standing. And the other one he was sitting, and I'm sure that probably was because of his leg, maybe.
He seems to be tall. Was this man short?
Uncle Clarence was a short man.
Mm. So actually he might not be as tall as it seems.
I would say Uncle Penn was a tall man from all indications.
Think he's past 60?
Good probability. You can see a lot of the Monroe boys' features, same as Uncle Penn.
Those high cheekbones.
And those big hands. And
You know, Bill's hands are pretty good size. Charlie had good size hands. And you see in this Bill Bovaerhal, the watch pocket up there, the prints of his watch. And
I suppose, is this a hat?
Holding his hat in his hand. Excuse me. But take note of the wrinkles in Uncle Penn's overalls there. You can see they're too long for him. And back years ago, a lot of times, instead of cutting a pair of pants off, they would roll them up from the bottom. And of course, when I was a young man, the style for overall pants then, you always turned the cuff up. That was in style. But back then, you can see where they're just kind of wrinkled up and rolled up there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would kind of walk on the heels of them.
Hmm.
I mean, their heels would walk on the back of the pant leg. You can see a lot of that. And a lot of them, clothes would be so old that the heel on the back part would just be wore out.
Does he have on boots or those work boots? They look almost like a Western toe, but I can't see.
I would say that those were work shoes. You know, I can't remember him wearing boots other than gum boots. You know, he doesn't have gum boots on there in that picture. But he was a type of man. There was a creek that still runs down through there. It was called the Horton Creek. Run in front of his house out there. And there wasn't even a briar or a bush on that creek bank. It was as clean as people's yard is today, all the way from his house out to the highway where he owned that. You could go by there and there was nothing to see him out there with a hole.
And we're talking
weed
about
or bush.
Clarence.
Uncle Clarence Wilson, uh-huh. And he was the type of fellow that, from all I gathered as a kid, you had to love him. From the start, he was good to you, and he was always willing to help people.
Did he have family?
Yes, uh-huh. He had a son, Tommy, and his wife was named Minnie, and she was a jolly, jolly, jolly person. And then he had a daughter, and right now I can't think of her name. Flossie. Tommy and Flossie. And Tommy passed away back just a few months ago. And Flossie is living over in Bowling Green.
Oh, so that's Flossie.
Uh-huh.
That we talked about yesterday.
When just a kid there, and Horton School was still going on, I was down visiting with my uncle, and of course, Uncle Clarence's grandson was named Wendell. And we were about the same age. And his mother was making a pie to take to the pie supper that night. Of course, she wanted to come up with a good pie, and it took several pies to get what she wanted. And I can remember that Wendell and myself eat lemon pie till we were sick. I mean, she just turned the pies over to us because she was wanting to get, you know, what she wanted to take there to sell that night. And the pie suppers were back in the good old days. And they'd do those things to raise little funds for the school. That's about the only funds, you know, they could do anything extra with, like if they needed to buy window shades for the windows or a new water bucket and, you know, just what little odds and ends they could buy. That was about the only way they had to raise any funds.
Is that all they ate was pie, or did they have other
things? No, they would
featured the pie.
Sometimes they call them box suppers, sometimes pie suppers. Mm. And I think what was referred to mostly as a box supper would probably have other food in there other than pie. And but the pies, they would put them up, see, and auction them off.
Oh, they'd auction.
And sometimes it would cost you a pretty penny to get to eat your sweetheart's pie. And we used to be bad about picking out one or two and getting together and make them pay pretty good for their pies, see. Yeah.
Do you like lemon pie today?
Oh, yes. My mother-in-law still
burned herself out on it.
No, but I mean, I can still feel my jaws, and that's been years and years ago, of, you know, had so much lemon. And, of course, she had an icing on them that was that thick. And she was a marvelous cook, too.
Well, let's talk about, I'm going to call this picture three. Now, we've got Uncle Penn and Mr. Wilson, Uncle Clarence. Now, who are these? Are these all women in the back?
They're women in the back, but I talked to Dwight, and Dwight's mother couldn't identify them. And we really don't know who they are. There's a possibility that one of them might be her and one of them might be Flossie or some of the other people that, you know, lived in the area. Because there was nothing in those days and times for, you know, company to come by and there'd be somebody there.
We were talking about these three women in picture three.
Well, this is the picture where Uncle Penn's crutches are visible.
Yes,
there.
They really are visible.
So that would have to be, you know, up in the last short while before he passed away, if those are his crutches, which I would almost believe they would be. Notice the big cuff he's got in his pant leg, doesn't he?
He does.
Way too long for him. He probably got them turned up three times there. But back then, see, you couldn't go in a store and buy something to fit you. They didn't have that many different sizes. So you had to take what you could get, and if you wasn't a seamstress, you didn't fix them. You just roll them up. Some people would just take the scissors and whack them off. But the cuff was kind of the fad back years ago anyway. A lot of people did that. And you'll see there in this picture where Uncle Clarence got his pant leg raised a little, that he had on the what we call the work shoe, the Brogan type shoe. And then Uncle Clarence looked like a rather young man there, even though I never remember seeing him without a mustache. But I can remember remarks that people made about him, and I never heard a bad one.
That says a lot for a person.
He was kind and always was willing to help someone, especially if they were trying to help themselves.
Were these men the kind of men who would attend church here?
Now that's something else people have said about Uncle Clarence, that he never went to church. But, and I don't know where Uncle Penn ever went to church or not. But if Uncle Clarence was a bad person, it never showed.
Well, church seems to be a real important part of this community overall.
Yes, but church is a part of the community, and people sometimes give the indication that church means everything. But back in the days of Christ, you didn't find all the churches filled with wonderful people. The church is what tried to destroy him to start with. The church is a good place, don't get me wrong, and there's no better place to come together, and we shouldn't fail to come together. But there's a lot of good people that's not in the church as we look at it. And, that doesn't mean they're not followers of Christ.
That's true. Now, when these
we try to judge people from what we think. And if we be the judges, I feel sorry for them.
No, me too.
And I've tried to get away from being the judge of anybody. I have occasionally, and I still do occasionally, and that's one of my downfalls, I'm sure. But I hope they're not judged according to my judgment when it comes to being the way.
Well, the kinds of music then these men would be playing, would it range from gospel to dance music, or was there a certain repertoire?
Or a hold down or something of that sort.
Did a lot of it go back to real old tunes, or did they, or were a lot of these guys writing, not really writing their own music because they couldn't write, but were they inventing their own music as
well? Yes, like I said, Cletus would do that especially. And I'm sure that Uncle Penn probably did with his...
Do you think Cletus was in copying the Opryland when you were talking about the blues singing?
No.
Or you think he was doing it anyway and it just happened
to be... Honey, he was picking the banjo then, and that hadn't even been invented as far as the world knows then.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually picking the banjo. He could pick it. He could do it both ways. He could strum it, or he could pick it. And but nobody ever, you know, it didn't pick up on it like they're doing it today. But he could do that then.
Now these guys would be socializing with this. Now, how often were there dances around here where these Uncle Penn and maybe Uncle Clarence would go to?
Well, I would say they probably had them once a week.
Was it usually a Saturday night or?
Friday night or Saturday night. And it was after the work was over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure you had those that probably didn't work too much that had them at other times.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true too.
But it was a get-together. It was a relief from the pressures that had been on them. And I'm sure that a lot of pressures were relieved through that.
Yes, I thought that.
And a lot of it kind of tells a story of the individual, what they have gone through, especially those that write some of the songs. And see, if a guy didn't write it, he might not be... the type of person could write out what he really thought. I never have written anything. In all the years that I've preached, I don't have a sermon. I just wasn't someone that done that. And I'm sure that a lot of people that played music and sang, in the back of their mind, they had thoughts, and these other songs went along with the things that had happened to them, or they could see themselves in that song. And by playing that song or listening to that song, there was some pressure relieved there. And that's what's wrong with the world. Now, I can't tell you what's wrong with the world, but there's a lot of us that lets pressure destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to release it. And there's a lot of ways to release pressure if people would...
The music does that for you, doesn't it?
The music does it. If I get disturbed, I sing. The more I'm disturbed, the louder I sing. And Burl Maher is a good friend of mine up here. He's always, every time we do anything together, I'm always humming. See? And Burl says, "Stoy, shut that humming up." But I always do it. It's just something that goes, it's just me.
Well, since you've got all this paperwork to do, maybe we should conclude this interview.
Good.
I was just looking at it, and it seems so long.
About the homemade.
It could have been, you know, back then that they made their own bow. It looked kind of like a fancy bow, but, you know, even down at the end there, that seems to be extra long, the handle part, what we would call the handle part. And he's playing it up above that. You see where he's got the grip on the bow?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he played with a very tight bow. Look at the distance between the wood and the bow part there. Just in the picture, it looks like it was an inch and a half there, doesn't it?
Yes, it does to me.
And
I'm not familiar with bows, but it... looks long.
It looked like an extra large bow.
Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe he was an extra large man and needed the bow to be bigger. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But you can tell that they really enjoyed themselves, and everybody almost had a camera, evidently, because a lot of the old pictures we see. And they done a pretty good job of taking the picture.
Yeah, they did.
With no knowledge of only just self-trained. Of course, like in that one, they could have got the feet where they didn't, had plenty of space, but...
they had different purpose in mind than we do.
Uh-huh. They wanted to get the picture, and I'm sure those girls were thrilled to death to stand behind those two men to have their pictures taken.
Well, shall we conclude for today?
Okay.
I've taken up a lot of your time, which I appreciate.
Well, you know, if you sit around and think, there's a lot of things.
Oh, well, I can come back.
Talk about
it.
Well, if you want to.
I'll be back.
There's just a lot of things you can think about and think back when you was kids and things of that sort. But, was really something, and you didn't think much about it.
Seen a lot of change.
That's like
too.
So many people in this area have never really thought about what bluegrass music could really do for Rosalie. It's done a lot. We're known throughout as being the home of bluegrass music, but has it really so?